I heard a couple reports yesterday that Amy Merritt also veered off and wrote something on her own. And I heard this in a couple stations. And I thought it was one of the most naive things I've ever heard a person say. If I took it the way she wrote it, that elections are a time of bringing down the temperature of the nation, not bringing it up. Elections always bring up the temperatures.
This is Plausibly Live, the official podcast of the Dave Bowman Show.
One of the things that I dislike most about being in live talk radio is the inability to take time to digest and to think about something. What do I mean? Usually a story breaks or is less than a few hours old, possibly even a day. And somehow or another, we're expected to have analyzed it, thought it through completely. And moreover, so are our callers who have opinions to express, and that's fine. Opinions are just that, they're opinions. They're not necessarily reality. But because we haven't had the time to think about things, because we haven't had the time to take into the entirety of what's going on, we lose context, I think, sometimes. And that, to me, is important, because context of something is key. But we, as a society, do not like to wait to gain that context, nor do we like to consider context. What do I mean? Bible verses are a great example of this. Here's a Bible verse that supports what I believe and or feel about a specific issue. And so I'll slap that Bible verse all over everything, and it'll become my mantra. Well, what about the 3, 5, 12, 15 other verses that make that not the case? You're taking it out of context. Back when I was a pastor, and for those of you who didn't know this, I was a pastor, we used to have to, you know, give our bios if we were going to speak somewhere or something. And I'd always ask for your favorite Bible verse. And people would pick, you know, the most mundane things. You know, I can do all things through Christ. God loves me. Whatever. And I would always put Galatians 5:12. And in all of my years as a pastor, as a speaker, only one person ever asked me why I put that. Why did you put that? Just to see if anybody, A, was actually reading them, and B, if anybody actually took the time to think about the context. It's important to understand context, and context is what develops intelligence. And by intelligence, I don't mean brain power. I mean understanding of a situation, like spy intelligence. That kind of intelligence is all about gathering data points and then connecting those dots. And if we don't do that, then we haven't really taken the time to consider the context of something. And we haven't really taken the time to let it marinate to the point where we actually can form a valid opinion about something. It doesn't mean that talk radio is bad in the immediacy of something. What it means is one of the things that I disliked was not always having that opportunity to do that. This past week on Monday, the Supreme Court released its ruling in Trump versus Anderson, which was the Colorado attempt to remove Donald Trump from the primary ballot in Colorado. Again, filed by Republicans. They're never Trumpers, I get it, but they're still Republicans. What does that tell us? The ruling was, of course, 9-0. Which I said at the time was a pleasant surprise to me. I fully expected this ruling to be 6-3. Possibly, worst case scenario, 5-4 sharply divided, with one of the justices, I suspected Roberts, but Barrett made sense, joining the minority. But a 6-3 is what made sense to me, and follow me here, I'll explain why as we go past, which is why the 9-0 ruling is surprising, and that's the context that we should be looking at. I think that the ruling should be 9-0 because the Constitution, Amendment 14, is not even close to vague on the matter. It's just not. If we're going to say we read the Constitution, we read these things, and we take the text on the paper, it's not vague. Congress is in charge of this. That has never stopped, you know, things before from being argued about. So what's the difference? So when we ask ourselves, why is this 9-0 instead of 6-3, which was kind of my expected lineup, we have to start gathering data points and start connecting dots. We are told by various news sources, depending on who you read, that the White House, particularly the office of Jill Biden, that area, did not react well to this ruling. That there was a great deal of wailing and gnashing of teeth, a great deal of language that was not the kind of language you would expect to hear in the White House, and that there was a great deal of expression of the general belief that, quote, the GOP has something on fill-in-the-blank justice. They must have something on them, because otherwise they wouldn't have voted to put Trump on the ballot. There was not a lot of reaction from the West Wing, primarily because there's no way that Biden and the White House team didn't already know that this ruling was coming. I mean, that's just reality. They knew well before, well in advance, that the ruling was coming, and they knew that it was 9-0. What I now call the pop Xers were also apoplectic. People like Keith Olbermann, who his tweet was almost embarrassing, his tweet dealing with the idea that these three liberal justices, I got to get the actual wording here because otherwise I'll feel like I'm not giving him credit for what he said. He was absolutely apoplectic. His tweet, or X, was, and I'm quoting him, "Fuck you, Sonia Sotomayor. Fuck you, Elena Kagan. Fuck you, Ketanji Brown Jackson. Liberal women are fucking useless," unquote. That is what Keith Olbermann tweeted. And what we are told the reaction was, at least in the Joe Biden wing of the White House. That it's telling in a lot of ways, isn't it? Here's a man who is a flaming liberal, who is now criticizing liberal women because they didn't toe the line. Is there any argument here about what they said? Is there any discussion here about what they wrote? Or is it just they're, quote, fucking useless, unquote? Why does he say that? Well, as I said, I expected it to be 6-3. I expected that the three liberal justices had already had much discussion, that there was a great deal of concern within the left, the Democrat Party, about this, and that there was an idea that was percolating. And that idea was that the three liberal justices in particular, and any one of the others that they could pick off, could vote no on this. Since there was going to be no signed opinion, they wouldn't really have to explain a no vote. So despite the fact that the Constitution is pretty clear, they could have voted no, made it 6-3. That would have left an opportunity to go before cameras and say, see those MAGA judges are allowing Trump on the ballot, while our three glorious liberal justices are fighting to preserve democracy. Wouldn't have been reality, but they could have said that. And that's my point, is I think there was an expectation that that was what was supposed to happen. It didn't happen. The Democrats expected the three to vote no, regardless of what the Constitution says, regardless of what they actually thought, and essentially expected them to do what they had been told to do. So you've got three minority women who are expected, having been put on the court primarily, at least in one case, because of their minority status, they're expected to now behave exactly as they've been told to behave. And they didn't. I think, and this is purely my theory, that the Democrats expected those three to vote no, no matter what. 6-3 divided court gives them the talking point. Look, the MAGA court saves Trump. Liberal justices need Biden and Democrats to retake the court. Look how elections have consequences. But the three did not necessarily go along. The language of the Constitution, as I said, is so plain that even ones that can't define woman had to look at it and go, yeah, it's kind of hard to argue that. My theory is that Elena Kagan, this is my theory, I have no evidence to support this, this is just a gut feeling, led the three into agreeing that Trump should not be removed from the ballot. It was either Kagan or Sotomayor. Sotomayor ends up writing their position, so maybe it was her. But even they understand that if you remove Trump from the ballot, immediately Republican states are going to start removing Biden from the ballot. It's not going to work. To vote any other way would have been condemned in the public as stupid and partisan, and the exact opposite would have occurred that they wanted to have happen. The Democrats would have said, see those MAGA judges. The Republicans would have said, these people can't even read the Constitution, and they're just trying to do something that's stupid and partisan. But in voting 9-0, they had to kind of try something. And so they wrote their dissent in part, which is, again, dissents are not the ruling. You need to understand that. Dissents are written primarily to justify one's position. Sometimes they're brilliant, and sometimes, like we got on Monday, they're stupid. Their entire dissent was that the case revolved around 14.3, Amendment 14, Section 3. So why are we talking about Amendment 14, Section 5? Which goes back to what I was saying about Scripture. If you just pick out the parts that you like, it may sound good on a piece of paper or in a bio, but it's not the full context. You can't enforce 14.3 without 14.5. But their entire argument was to claim that 14.5 should not have been of consideration at all. But by doing so, the court presumptively eliminated all the other challenges, Maine, Illinois, possibly other states. And so they had to put this in there saying, see, we shouldn't have done this. This is where you get to the question about why Amy Comey Barrett, wrote this concurring in part, agreeing with the decision. When you take all the data points in question, the Obermann tweet, the Biden White House, the Joe Biden White House response, the inability to go in front of the cameras and say, see, these MAGA judges saved Trump. When taken with that view, that these three had literally gone off the reservation and denied the Democrat Party their talking points, you start to see this thing a little bit differently. In Barrett's, I don't even know what to call it. She calls it concurring in part and concurring in the judgment. It's not even a dissent. This is the kind of thing that she wanted to reply. Keep in mind the way these things are written. They are circulated among the justices. They read each other's opinions. They read each other's and they can respond. And it takes time to write these things. And I think she read that response, that dissent in part, and she felt the need to remind those three of one thing that they couldn't get around. You can say 14.5 shouldn't have come into it. And she sort of hints that she kind of agrees with that. Maybe we didn't need to do that. But whether we did or not, she writes, it didn't affect the ruling. You can write a dissent in part, she says, but you voted with us to make it 9-0 that Trump should not be removed from the ballot. The Supreme Court was united, and apparently the three and the Democrats' party needed to be reminded of that fact, that it was 9-0, which is why she wrote those words. Quote, all 9 justices agree on the outcome of this case. That is the message that Americans should take home. Does that really sound all that naive? I think it's actually pretty pointed. And that's the difference between taking the time to understand the context of something versus simply reacting.